Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 47, Text Number 4. Janimashtam nirupate
Janimashtam nirupate
Parshadam samubhagatam
Parshadam samubhagatam
Bhatreha prashita pitro
Bhatreha prashita pitro
Bhavanpriya chikirshaya
Bhavanpriya chikirshaya
Janimastham nirupate
Janimastham nirupate
Harshadam samupagatam
Harshadam samupagatam
Matreha pasita pitra
Matreha pasita pitra
Bhavanpriya chikirshaya
Bhavanpriya chikirshaya
Janimastham nirupate
Janimastham nirupate
Harshadam samupagatam
Harshadam samupagatam
Bhatreha pasita pasita pitra
Bhatreha pasita pitra
Bhavanpriya chikirshaya
Bhavanpriya chikirshaya Janimastham yadupate Janimastham yadupate Harshadam samupagatam Chief of the Yadus, Parshadam, the personal associates, Samupagatam, arrived here, Bhatra, for your master, Iha, here, Prasitaha, sent, Pitra, of his parents, Bhavan, your good self, Priya, satisfaction, Chikirushaya, wanting to give. Translation. The gopi said, we know that you are the personal servant of Krishna.
the chief of the Yadus, and that you have come here on the order of your good master, who desires to give pleasure to his parents. I'll read the next slogan.
Anyata kograje tasya smaraniyam na chakshmahi snehanu bandho bandhanam unerapisu dushyaja.
We see nothing else he might consider worth remembering in these cow pastures of Braja. Indeed, the bonds of affection for one's family members are difficult to break, even for a sage. There's no purports to this. There's no purports here, although Srila Prabhupada does mention all of these slokas, of course, in the Krishna book. And so we can always, Srila Prabhupada always illuminates some, he presents these verses in a very simple way, in which the essence is presented very clearly, essential points, and we can take the essential purports sometimes from Srila Prabhupada's Krishna books. And of course we also have the purports by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. But somehow or another, of course if there is no if we cannot understand what the acharyas would like us to understand from these verses, then of course we shouldn't speculate. But if the acharyas have given sufficient information, then we can speak about these verses. Most of these verses, actually, if you look through the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna book, sort of Prabhupada's, you know, various lectures and books, there are many comments on all of these verses. So these, I'll just read the translations again. The gopis are speaking to Uddhava, and they're very, very deep. They take a lot of thought to actually, you know, delve into what they're actually saying, what is their mood. So I'll just read them again. The gopi said, "We know that you are the personal servant of Krishna, the chief of the Yadus, and that you have come here on the order of your good master who desires to give pleasure to his parents." So of course the interesting thing that we would first note there is that they haven't mentioned themselves. So that is an obvious omission. There's some meaning to that. The next verse says, "We see nothing else he may consider worth remembering in these cow pastures of Braja. Indeed, the bonds of affection for one's family members are difficult to break, even for a sage." So there are statements in the Puranas that this Srimad Bhagavatam, on every line, it reveals the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Every line in Srimad Bhagavatam. If we can understand these verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, then they reveal the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, understanding a particular line or sentence within the Srimad Bhagavatam means that it does have to be put into context. Now, of course, what some people do is that they will take the lines of Srimad Bhagavatam totally out of context with the entirety of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and construe some other meaning. So that is very dangerous. So from every line of Srimad Bhagavatam, we can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but that means that those lines have to be understood in the context of Srimad Bhagavatam as a whole. Just like when we do Srimad Bhagavatam study, the Vaishnava Institute has Education Institute, they have a method where you study two or three verses are connected, and then the next few verses which are connected, and you get the main point from what they are saying, and then from a whole chapter then you may have about 10 main points, and then those main points of course will link up, so then you'll have a theme for the chapter, you'll have a theme for certain verses, a canto will have a certain theme. In that way we can expand that and we can understand Srimad Bhagavatam in the context, each part of the Srimad Bhagavatam in context. They're not just sometimes you get those little books of sayings by this prophet and that prophet, and there's sort of like a hodgepodge of different things that the person may have said at different times or what have you. Srimad Bhagavatam is not like that. It is a development of consciousness from the very beginning to help people rise from literally completely being immersed in material consciousness with no real knowledge of spiritual subject matters, and to bring them to the highest possible spiritual realizations that are possible. It is a development gradually of consciousness. It's described that if someone doesn't in their entire life, if they never read Srimad Bhagavatam, then they will continue in the cycle of birth and death. There's nothing they can do. No, it doesn't matter what else they are doing. If they go through their entire life and never hear Srimad Bhagavatam, there is no chance of being released from the cycle of birth and death. So, it's also described that if someone, for those who take Srimad Bhagavatam, it's very dear, very, very dear, more dear than their very self. For those persons, they will never be punished by Yamaraj, meet with punishment by Yamaraj even in 100 lifetimes. And those people who are averse to the Srimad Bhagavatam and averse to the Vaishnavas who are teaching Srimad Bhagavatam, 100 generations, they condemn by that activity 100 generations of their family members to hellish punishments. The Srimad Bhagavatam is essential, very, very important scripture for understanding. And it is not a take it or leave it sort of a book. It's like you might go into a bookstore. You might buy this book, you might buy that one. It doesn't really matter. So many books. The Srimad Bhagavatam for human society is a must. So, even if a person, does not appreciate the teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam, then no matter how high they, what sort of a high birth they have taken in this world, they'll be degraded to the level of a Yavana or a Chandila, the lowest grade person. Anyone who is against the principle of Srimad Bhagavatam, doesn't matter how high they've taken birth, according to the Shastras, they will be degraded to a very low status of life. And even if one is born in the most lowest position, if they take the precepts of Srimad Bhagavatam as their life and soul, they will be elevated to the topmost level. Just like Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur was actually born in a family of Yavanas. His parental heritage was considered quite a low birth, and yet he was considered to be elevated beyond even the Brahmanas and even amongst Vaishnavas to be considered the topmost, because he always abided by the precepts of Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavatam is a very, very important book, and of course the only way you can understand Srimad Bhagavatam is to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam from a devotee who is situated in parampara disciplic succession and who is presenting exactly what his acharya and previous acharyas have presenting that same information. That is the only way you can understand Srimad Bhagavatam. Otherwise it is not possible to enter into the Srimad Bhagavatam. Here, these discussions here between the gopis, of which Srimati Radharani is personally present, and we'll see later on that she begins to speak. And her speaking, this chapter, actually reveals 10 different manifestations of Chitrajalpa, which is a divine state of madness in the highest state of love of God in Mahabhava. So this particular chapter, Srimati Radharani, she manifests the highest degrees of love of God. Spiritual existence, spiritual consciousness is presented in this chapter. Easy to enter into that. Even prema, love of God or prema is very, very difficult to understand. A devotee who is situated in love of God is not understood. His activities, his thoughts, his words, by ordinary persons, even great scholars cannot understand the activities of one who is situated in love of God, pure love of God, prema. So, beyond the realms of prema, we have higher stages. There is prema, there is manna, there is pranaya, there is raga, anuraga, bhava, and mahabhava. Not the bhava that comes before prema, the different bhava. So this topmost level, Mahabhava, that is only experienced by the gopis, and then even the topmost levels of that Mahabhava is only manifested by Srimati Radharani herself. And there is a display of that topmost level of Mahabhava in her discussion, the Song of the Bee, where Srimati Radharani, in divine madness, so intense is her pitch of love of God, that it's like a state of divine madness where she's speaking erratically, crazy talk to a bumblebee, mistaking that bumblebee for a messenger sent by Krishna. So these subject matters, of course, are therefore very difficult to enter into. And the only way one can enter them is to somehow be eased into these subject matters via media of hearing through devotees, Vaishnavas. Others have no access. Those who are, in material consciousness, they have no access whatsoever to these pastimes. One time, Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Someone came to him and asked him to discuss Ashtakalya Lila, the eightfold daily pastimes of Srimati Radharani and Krishna. They wanted to hear these, you know, how he could absorb himself in these intimate conjugal pastimes of Srimati Radharani and Lord Sri Krishna. Very, very elevated subject matters, which are, only barely just entered into in the stage of bhava, and really at the beginnings of prema, one begins to taste rasa, and then as prema develops, when one has a completely spiritual body, then these other manifestations of manas, neha, pranaya, what have you, they be one taste rasa in slightly higher levels, and then one can actually understand these Ashtakala Lila by tasting them on the spiritual platform. Theoretically, one may have a theoretical understanding, but that is really nothing. It is like to have a theoretical understanding of honey. Someone says, "Oh yes, I have studied honey. I've never tasted honey, but I have studied in a university all my life. You ask me anything about honey, I can tell you about honey. I can tell you the colour, what jar it comes in, the various brands, how the bees make it." He asked, "But have you tasted honey?" "Oh no." So, really, what is the value? Okay, so, theoretical, reading books. If someone picks up a book, I have read, the Brahmara Gita, this is called the Song of the Bee, this chapter, the Brahmara Gita. I have read the Brahmara Gita. But have you tasted it? Have you elevated your consciousness to the level of love of God where you can taste Brahmara Gita? Or is there some theoretical, dry understanding? So, we have to be eased into these pastimes through Vaishnavas who know how to taste and relish these pastimes. They fully understand, they can fully taste, relish, understand, and teach according to a person's level. They can allow people to enter into these pastimes according to their level. So, Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, of course, when someone was asking him, he wanted to hear about these intimate pastimes of Radha Krishna, and he said, "Well, I do not have any leisure time at the moment, but you come back another time, and when I have some leisure time, then I will speak." Of course, every time this man came, at the moment I do not have any leisure time. So he never ever spoke, and of course the man became disinterested and just went away and didn't come back. Of all he could have asked Gaura Kishore Das Babaji about so many things where he would have got instruction. But because he couldn't get this to hear these intimate pastimes, then he went away. But Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, of course, explained to some of his associates and those who did come to hear him, who were prepared to be chastised by Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, those who were prepared to sit and be told to give up sense gratification and to stop being a nonsense and to stop being an imposter. Those persons were able to hear from Gaura Kishore Das Babaji and sit and get the nectar. Anyway, he explained to them that a person who laments or becomes disappointed over the loss of a coin can never understand these pastimes of Radha Krishna. For persons whose consciousness is obviously their pleasure is coming from so many different material attachments, then they can never understand these pastimes. They can never really enter into them. As he said, there may be some theoretical understanding, but where will their spiritual body come from? See, because these pastimes are understood as our spiritual senses become more and more uncovered. Not through the material senses. Srila Prabhupada describes Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji as actually quite humorous. He was we always think of him as being very serious, which he was, no doubt. He was also quite humorous. He said, you know, discussing this same point, he said, people like to build a tower 2 stories high, and they climb all the way up to the top, and then they pass through it. So, in other words, if we take Srimad Bhagavatam, which is presenting the most elevated of spiritual topics, and we, utilize them for our material purposes, or for some foolish purposes, we have not really taken advantage of that very, very elevated opportunity and spiritual topic. So it's just like climbing to a high tower and then just passing still. That can be done anywhere. In the same way, someone who takes Srimad Bhagavatam and yet without hearing Srimad Bhagavatam under the guidance of a Vaishnava, and therefore, see Srimad Bhagavatam with some material motivated way, they cannot get the benefits from that. And they may as well take their sense gratification. It's better actually they take their sense gratification from some more honest source. One time, Srila Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, one professional Bhagavatam reciter came to him and recited some Srimad Bhagavatam. So Jagannath Das Babaji said, "Your recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam is the same as the profession of a prostitute." They're very, very, very powerful words. That, if you are taking Srimad Bhagavatam, speaking Srimad Bhagavatam to earn a livelihood so that then you can enjoy your sense gratification, that is the same as what a prostitute does. She takes some source where she can earn some money and utilizes that money for their sense gratification. It is the same business. But in that case, actually, that person became so Jagannath Das Babaji's words, which were very harsh, very hard, but they entered so deeply into his heart that he actually renounced that practice. And he went to live in Vrindavan and gave up the profession of professionally reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, and then he began to hear Srimad Bhagavatam in the Holy Dham, in the association of Vaishnavas, and lived a very, very simple, humble and renounced life. In that way, one can actually enter into the Srimad Bhagavatam. Another time, someone came to Gaurakishore Das Babaji and said that, down the road there, everyone has been going to hear this very elevated Goswami. And he is reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, the Brahma Gita, this chapter here. And everyone is in ecstasy. And he is constantly chanting, "Gaura, Gaura," in ecstasy. Like that. And Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, he said, actually, when he is shouting, "Gaura, Gaura," what he is actually shouting is, "Rupees, rupees." And this person said, no, you know, Gaurav Kishordas Babaji, you know, the people there, they are, you know, they are crying and in ecstasy. And Gaurav Kishordas Babaji said, that crying in ecstasy is just the madness of their lust. It is not ecstatic symptoms, it's just the madness of their lust. So, because it is just not possible. It is just not possible to actually, just by book knowledge, to just read these pastimes and just, you know, think that we are automatically on some very elevated spiritual, platform where we are, you know, tasting, you know, these very elevated pastimes of Radha and Krishna and experiencing all these ecstatics. And this is just not possible for someone who's, you know, lost somewhere in the material world, the vast material energy, you know, covered by layers and layers and layers, and being in the material world, you know, conditioned since time immemorial, you know, and in their crazy imaginations, they somehow come across from the Bhagavatam. They see that people are, interested in these things, and that they can, you know, if they speak from the Bhagavatam, you know, it is very lucrative. And they tend to imitate, you know, very elevated states, but it's not actually possible for them to really enter into it. And in fact, Gaurav Kishordas Babaji says that there is no benefit from hearing from such persons, but what actually results is there is a great disturbance to everyone. There's a huge disturbance. In the name of religion, it's bad enough that people, you know, already do not believe in God. But if the people who profess to believe in God, you know, run around committing the most abominable activities in the name of religion, that this is religion. You know, our most heinous, sinful, illicit sexual activities, this is the highest religion. When people, you know, present that is a huge disturbance. People do not need encouragement, to be, in this day and age, people do not need encouragement for their sinful activity. They're already going at it like a bat out of hell. You know, for someone to then present to them that Srimad Bhagavatam, God is, you know, condoning your illicit activities. In fact, your activities will take you to heaven. This is the last thing that we should be teaching people. So, so actually, Srila Gaurav Kishordas Babaji, he said that if people are really interested to hear these topics, then we should test them. They should, give up, leave everything behind, and at least for 1 year they should seriously chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra in the association of devotees, giving up all forms of sense gratification. If they can do that at least for 1 year, then to some degree it shows some real intent to hear these pastimes, not just to exploit them for some material purposes, and in that way then the guru, the spiritual master, may be a little tempted to speak something about these pastimes. Because we certainly have to be very, very careful in presenting these confidential subject matters, because as Srila Gaurav Kishordas Babaji, he gives you a really nice example actually, that when there is a huge downpour, If there are, you know, tiny little plants, they may be completely, you know, smashed to pieces. They may be killed. And if there are big strong weeds, they will grow much more profusely because of that strong downpour of rain. So, people who are not ready to hear, you know, these very intimate pastimes of, you know, Srimati Radharani and Sri Krishna, they somehow equate them with their own lusty affairs in the material world, and their hearts are, you know, filled with the motives of passion and ignorance. And their creeper of devotional service is just a tiny little plant just beginning to grow. If they, you know, hear these pastimes and immerse themselves in it, it will actually incite the lusty desires within the heart full bloom. And the next thing, they will, instead of becoming more spiritual in their activities, they will become more lusty and engage in all sorts of nonsense. And in this case, quite often, you know, in the name of spiritual life, and therefore they will cause havoc. Whereas, on the other hand, you know, if the creeper of devotional service is very strong and powerful, and the weeds, you know, have been carefully rooted out, and that, you know, there may be just a few little ones coming up that haven't been noticed yet. But when there's a big downpour like that, then that bhakti lata, creeper of devotional service, it flourishes. And the weeds are actually smashed to pieces. So we have to be very, very careful in presenting. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada has given us Krishna book, in which these pastimes are presented in a such a wonderful expert way that, you know, even for the general person, practically on the street, you can give them a Krishna book and pretty safely, they will be able to read those pastimes without being, they'll be properly warned about seeing the pastimes in the wrong way, constantly instructed that we're dealing with Krishna here, he's not an ordinary person. Srimati Radharani is not an ordinary girl, she is Sri Krishna's spiritual internal pleasure potency, constantly instructed in these matters, and things are presented, you know, just in summary form, very nicely. Of course, even for people like that, sometimes, even the general public, we may even ease them into the Krishna book with some, you know, other little books. But still, Krishna book is there for people in general. Srimad Bhagavatam, here Prabhupada would say, Srimad Bhagavatam classes, they're actually for the devotees. In Srimad Bhagavatam classes. And here we see that in the conversation between Srimati Radharani and Uddhava, in the backdrop of the purity of their love, their spiritual love, any anomalies, any imperfections will immediately be exposed. So it's an interesting how they're speaking here. They're saying, we know that you are the personal servant of Krishna, the chief of the Yadus. So, and that you have come here on the order of your good master who desires to give pleasure to his parents. So the gopis, of course, on seeing Uddhava, who has been sent to deliver a message of pure love to the gopis, they have seen Uddhava and understood from his bodily features, because he pretty much exactly resembles Krishna, even wearing the similar clothes. In fact, you know, they were a little astonished that, you know, how did you get Krishna's clothes? So he was so much resembling Krishna. And they had understood, you know, you must be a great devotee of Krishna. They understood from his beautiful bodily features and, you know, obviously manifesting Sarupya Mukti, the liberation of achieving the same bodily features as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so they asked him to, you know, come to a private place where they could speak without, you know, freely about their spiritual loving sentiments to Krishna without being embarrassed by other persons. And of course Uddhava immediately went with them, so they knew, well, the fact that he's just, you know, immediately come with us, then that sort of confirms that he does have some message for Krishna, from Krishna. So they were happy about that. And then they were, in speaking to Uddhava, they said that we know that you are the personal servant of Krishna, the chief of the Yadus. Now they've addressed Krishna as Yadupati. Yadupati infers that Krishna is now living in Mathura as the king, like a king, and he's actually put, I think it was Ugrasena on the throne, but he is living also like a king in great royal opulence, surrounded by all the huge big city and all the trappings of a wonderful city, opulent city, is Mathura. So Yadupati, in other words, in saying that, there's an inference that, you know, now that Krishna has, you know, he is, has that wonderful life in the big city, you know, really, what would he be, you know, what would his interest be in this, you know, little cowherd village of Vrindavan? You know, that's the inference, that's why they're addressing him, Yadupati. And they're saying to him that, you have come here on the order of your good master who desires to give pleasure to his parents. So, the gopis, they are thinking that, now previously, Krishna was addressed as, in the previous verse, he was addressed as the master of the goddess of fortune. Now even in that verse, Sukadeva Goswami, who's actually taking the side and the mood of the gopis, he's addressing Krishna as the master of the goddess of fortune. In other words, he's suggesting, he's implying that even the goddess of fortune comes to Vrindavan to offer service to the residents. And yet Krishna is sending a messenger. You know, the goddess of fortune is personally coming to Vrindavan, and Krishna is just sending a messenger. That is the inference there. And similarly, here, there's the implication that why didn't Krishna come himself? You know, if there was real concern for his parents, Nanda and Yashoda, you know, why would he send a messenger? You know, it's understood by everyone that they would be crying day and night, separation from Krishna. So there are, you know, very subtle implications in these. So that there is the implication, the very subtle hint that Krishna, in one sense, that he is sending Uddhava to pacify Nanda and Yashoda, because naturally, you know, if he is living the big life in Mathura, that people may criticize, oh, you know, here you are in Mathura living like a king, and your mother and father are there crying in, you know, Vrindavan. Oh no, I have sent a messenger to pacify. That is what the gopis, in one sense, that is there. That is there. But at the same time, they also understand that Krishna dearly loves Nanda and Yashoda. But see, the gopis, in their pain of separation, they are wondering about Krishna's love. You know, why you know, there's the anxiety. Why would, is he coming back? Why did he leave us? You know, perhaps he doesn't love us. You know, naturally those things go through the mind. Someone who's, you know, deeply, deeply in love. You know, Krishna is their life and soul. And it's just, but the nature of the gopi's love is pure love. There's one definition of prema given in the Narada Bhakti Sutra, that prema, when there is every cause for the separation, you know, the breaking up of a relationship between lovers, is all the causes are present, and yet that does not happen, then that is love. To give an example, recently there was one man a few months ago, and the night before his wedding, he went out on Bucks Night, had some terrible accident, and is now paraplegic for the rest of his life. And but the person he was going to marry, they were actually just married yesterday, I think it was. So she stuck with him. So you know, there was every cause. She could have actually thought, gee, you know, life of the paraplegic. That's not what I had in mind. You know, and but she stuck, you know, so you can understand there must be some, you know, love. Something there. So, you know, prema is like that. So the nature of the gopis, of course, is that even if Krishna handled them very, very roughly, that doesn't mean that they're going to give up their relation. But they're, you know, they're so much in love with Krishna spiritually, means that they are always looking for the opportunity to please Krishna. That, you know, when there's some disturbance to that relationship, naturally they become full of anxiety. And so these, you know, feelings of anxiety are manifesting in their topics. There's a little bit of anger rising as they're speaking with Uddhava. Now, what's it called? Mana, anger. The anger of love. As is described by Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti Thakura, you know, in the case of Bhīṣma, you know, Bhīṣma, who loved Krishna so very dearly, and understanding Krishna's desire, Krishna's plan, you know, he fought very, very ferociously against Krishna, and Krishna was accepting, you know, the arrows and, you know, that attack by Bhīṣma, like, you know, like a lover throwing flowers. Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti Thakura describes, you know, that it is like a love bite. And sometimes in, you know, the lover, she'll bite her beloved. Not out of anger or hatred, it's out of intense love. So it's like that. It's an expression of love. So, you know, there's a little anger rising in the gopis, but this is not the anger that we know of. This is, you know, the gopis' love for Krishna is intensifying. This, in this, you know, this whole, and this is the reason, the very reason that Krishna is actually in Mathura, is to intensify his love for the gopis and their love for him. And Krishna, you know, he is not there to enjoy, you know, the royal opulence of Mathura and what have you. Krishna is very concerned for the residents of Vrindavan, very concerned for his parents, very concerned for the you know, all the inhabitants. He didn't want to go back to Mathura because he knew so many demoniac persons were still on the planet, and if he went to Vrindavan, they would be attacking there. But he thought, if I stay in Mathura, they will live in peace, that, you know, and, you know, all the demons and the rascals, they will come to me and, you know, I will kill them in Mathura. So for that reason, he didn't want to go back to Mathura. And for the other reason also is that Krishna always makes arrangements to increase loving affairs. So he's increasing the gopis' pitch of love and then he reciprocates in a much more increased fashion. So all of this is, so you know, these manifestations, little anger, little anxiety, these are increasing the pitch of love. It is not as we know it, where, you know, there's a little disturbance in a relationship, the relationship breaks up, people become angry, they want to kill each other, you know, they fight each other in the courts, and it's not that sort of thing there. But, you know, this is where it gets a little difficult, because people associate some of these things, which are similar to our lusty affairs in this material world, as the same, but they are not. So, but there, you know, there's a little bit of innuendo, some subtle, you know, statements about Krishna, you know, perhaps, you know, what is the nature of this, how beloved, like this, but, it, you know, it is being generated from their intensifying love. and so that needs to be understood there. So, then they go on to describe that we see nothing else he might consider worth remembering in these cow pastures of Braja. Indeed, the bonds of affection for one's own family members are difficult to break even for a sage. So here, continuing with the same thought, that, you know, now Krishna is in, you know, Mathura with all its opulence and splendor. You know, what would he, you know, what is there here in this simple village that would, you know, be attractive to him? You know, even his own parents, although he has sent the messenger Uddhava, you know, he hasn't even, you know, if he has not come here for Nanda and Yasoda, why else would he come? Would he come for the pastures and the cows? They're thinking like this. No. So they state here that, you know, indeed the bonds of affection for one's family members are difficult to break even for a sage. So generally, even people take sannyas, you know, which is a renounced order of life, still it's quite common that they will sometimes, you know, think of their parents with affection. You know, they may give up many other relationships and really never really give them a second thought. But, you know, the relationships with one's parents, which are, you know, generally closer to pure relationships in this world. Even sannyasis, you know, they sometimes have some residual affection and they will think of their parents, you know, fondly. We see this in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, that he was, you know, Jai Satchinandana. He made arrangements that although he had taken sannyas, that he would live in Puri, Jagannath Puri, because if he lived in Puri, then there would be constant coming and going of devotees, and his mother would literally always be, you know, hearing of his pastimes, because he wouldn't be too far away, and because it's like the hive of activities, and therefore all the devotees used to regularly go to Jagannath Puri, and then they'd come back and tell Mother Sachi, oh, you know, look, your son's doing this, your son did this, like this. So in that way he actually kept contact, kept the relationship out of his love. So that is natural. So the gopis are thinking that, you know, what is the severity of Krishna's renunciation? That, you know, even sannyasis keep some, you know, little affection there for their parents. And Krishna, even his parents are crying night and day here in Vrindavan. Still, he is there in Mathura. Like that. So they, you know, considering that severity of renunciation, they're thinking, what hope do we have, you know, of that Krishna will remember us? Actually, Srila Prabhupada once he commented that this is Krishna's renunciation. Prabhupada once commented that, you know, Krishna was surrounded by hundreds and thousands of the most beautiful Lakshmis, goddesses of fortune, these, you know, spiritual personalities, qualified, you know, in all the spiritual qualities and 64 different arts. And yet he just left them in a moment. That is Krishna's renunciation. That is the opulence of Krishna's renunciation. And when he was asked, you know, that they were all crying. Everyone in Vrindavan is crying, they're like dead because of your separation. And he would say, yes, I will go back in a few days. And they would ask again, oh yes, I will go back in a few days. And Prabhupada laughed. Now, this is Krishna's renunciation. So, in one sense, you know, Krishna manifested that supreme opulence of renunciation. He's not attached. He's, you know, to anything. And he did, in one feature, stay in Mathura and never return. But, simultaneously, because he's God, he also manifests deep loving reciprocations with all his devotees, and he actually returned to Vrindavan and was there and was constantly performing pastimes with the residents of Vrindavan night and day. Simultaneously, this is God. So he is not just some, you know, sometimes, you know, you see yogis and sannyasis in the impersonal school. They feel that because they have renounced everything, that this is the sign of their godship. I am so renounced from everything in this material world, you can take it, that I have become Narayan. But to become God, they have to manifest all the opulences, not just renunciation, not just a little renunciation that they manifest. Generally, the renunciation of such personalities is that they keep themselves very much distant from the objects of the senses. That's one form of renunciation. The beginning of renunciation is that you keep yourself distant from the objects of sense gratification. Real renunciation means even you're surrounded by the objects of renunciation, you're completely detached. So, they do not have that. Krishna has that renunciation. So, Krishna is the, he has supreme renunciation, that he can be surrounded by unlimited gopis. God is the fortune, and he will leave them like that. That is renunciation. He's completely, completely detached. But at the same time, because he is God, he possesses all the other opulences. And therefore, he reciprocates with all those opulences, with his devotees, in pastimes of love. Simultaneously. So this is Krishna. So these are some of the thoughts of the gopis in their increasing anxiety of love and separation. With a little tinge of anger. And heading towards divine madness. And gradually, as this their mood increases, and we also see later how Krishna very nicely reciprocates with his devotees. So I'll leave it there. If anyone has any questions or comments. Yeah. But just one other point that. Touched on before, that in the, you know, in the backdrop of the gopis' pure love for Krishna, you know, anything that is out of place, or if there's a speck of, you know, you see the gopis' minds that they are, you know, looking, you know, is there anything else here but pure love? That is basically the consciousness of the gopis. That's what they are looking. Of course, they will find that in Krishna. Between Krishna and the gopis, they have a battle of love. The battle of love is who can love the other person more purely without accepting anything in exchange. So the gopis are trying to, you know, love Krishna. You know, they're not trying, it just comes naturally. They are loving Krishna purely without any tinge of wanting anything in return. And doesn't matter how he treats them, they will never, you know, in fact, they will only ever increase. And Krishna is the same. And he is always looking for the opportunity to show his, you know, great love to the gopis. This is spiritual. But that is actually love, when there's no, you know, desire for anything in return. When relationships are based upon desire for something in return, that's lust. That is what we do in the material world. You know, our love is really, you know, what's in it for you, what's in it. There is certainly some degree of love, because it's the nature of the spirit soul to be, you know, loving, to be situated in pure love. That is the very nature of the spirit soul. So to some degree or another, that spiritual quality is there in relationships in the material world. But the more it is materially covered, the more the lust is there. And the more the material coverings come off, the more the lust disappears, and the more the love, the pure love, you know, manifests. But in devotional service, this is what we should learn from the gopis, is that whatever service we perform for Krishna, we should always be looking ourselves. And if we happen to be, you know, helping others, helping them also, that are we doing our service for love for Krishna, or are we still, have we come to devotional service with some, you know, material motivations, and now that we're performing devotional service, we're still trying to satisfy those same material motivations. Just like someone may read Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, before coming to Srimad Bhagavatam, they're very interested in money and, you know, sense gratification. They come across Srimad Bhagavatam and they're still interested in money and sense gratification, so they read Srimad Bhagavatam as a profession. Things haven't changed. In the same way, if we come to Krishna consciousness and we're still looking for the same things, but still there's some benefit. There's no doubt there's benefit. But if we actually want to develop love of God, we have to be aware that pure love of God means it is unmotivated. When devotees develop that love of God, pure love of God, unmotivated love of God, it is at that stage that they can begin to understand these pastimes of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which are based upon pure love of God. At that, they can begin to really understand, enter into them, taste them, take proper instruction, and implement that in their lives. That's what we should be doing. It's not that when we hear these pastimes of Radha Krishna, we should be rolling on the floor. Oh, I heard the pastimes of Radha Krishna, I'm in such ecstasy. We should be thinking, what are they telling me? What are they displaying? For our benefit, they're showing that whatever you do for Krishna, kick out all motivations and you just do it purely out of love. That is it. And that means that, you know, you shun sense gratification. And if you are doing service for Krishna, you're not looking for any reward. You're not doing it because there's some profit. You're not doing it because there's some status, some position. Sometimes you see that. You know, we've seen that in our society, that sometimes people have fallen into that. That sometimes people have very, very big position, and then when the position's gone, they're no longer interested in serving Krishna. We've seen that. As long as the position is there, very, very keen. Yes, let me serve Krishna, do this. Sometimes the position is gone. I seem to have lost my enthusiasm. What were they attached to? You have to ask. We have to learn that, you know, that we are the sole purpose. Actually, I heard Prabhupada say that this morning on a tape as I was doing the paraphernalia in there. The sole purpose of this Krishna consciousness movement is to please Krishna. That's it. And, you know, when we perform our services, whatever it be, on that platform, then we are very, very safe. If we, you know, do not monitor the weeds that sometimes grow in the heart, and we allow ourselves to perform services for some particular material benefits, that can be very dangerous, and it may jeopardize our, you know, situation as a devotee, because sometimes actually Gaura Kishore Das Babaji also said this, that what Lord Nityananda does is that he actually, when sometimes people come like that, he fulfills their material desires so that they go away. If someone is actually insincere, he will actually fulfill their material desires, they get what they want, and they quite often go away. That's a way of, you know, then the devotees don't have to associate with imposters who are really after material benefits and cause all sorts of disturbance. There he does. So we have to be very, very careful. Any other comments or questions?
Yep. I was just thinking last night before I was going to sleep. I couldn't sleep, and I was just thinking to myself, I'm just going to think about Hare Krishna from now on. And then I was watching my mind, and I had about maybe 5 minutes thinking about the deities, and then straight away it was drifting into material consciousness.
And it lasted 5 minutes.
Well done, well done. Yeah, 5 minutes. Hey, 5 minutes. Well, that's good.
No, that's,
I know exactly what you mean.
Subconsciously or consciously in your mind, like that, and think, right, I'm going to think about Krishna from now on, and then.
That's why Gaura Kishore Das Babaji constantly states we should hear Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees. We should chant Hare Krishna in the association of devotees. When you associate with devotees, especially devotees who are actually sincere, it makes it so easy. There are various statements in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, text number chapter 25, text number 36, I think it is, that, you know, the holy name, form, pastimes, and, you know, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they manifest in the association of devotees. The Lord's name, His qualities, His form, His pastimes will manifest to us in the association of devotees. Otherwise, they don't manifest. So, yes, if we're in the association of devotees, well, you know, very easily, you know, the pastimes and, you know, the qualities and the holy name. And without the association of devotees, Krishna withdraws. Sorry, all goes to the problem.